the Shattering Myths, the program that's devoted to those of you who have come to realize that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive. I am Yada. If you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, the number is toll-free, 877-376-45. Before we get to our guest, I would like to correct something that was said in the SRN news segment. SRN is a Christian broadcasting network where it said, "Do you believe in Jesus?" There was no Jesus. That name first came into existence in the 17th century. And not only was there no person named Jesus, but the Christian interpretation of Yahusha, the actual name of the individual, is the antithesis of who he actually was. And so there really is nothing for Christians other than belief, because evidence and reason would lead them into an entirely different direction. Now, a man who spent much of his life pursuing evidence and coming to reasoned conclusions about them, and under two different names. One would be Victor Mordecai. The other is Avi Lipkin. He is our guest. How are you, Avi?
Terrific. How are you?
I'm great. Now, you are in Yisrael as we are speaking, are you not?
I'm in Jerusalem, correct.
Oh, well, the most wonderful of all cities. A city that has a few scars on it, like the Dome of the Hoofy Print in the middle of it, is probably my least favorite building in the world. Known also as the Shrine of the Rock, I prefer to call it the Dome of the Hoofy Print, because that's where, of course, Muhammad claimed that after flying the wild winged ass from Mecca to Jerusalem, he went into the non-existent temple to meet with all of the Jewish bigwigs prior to leaping off to heaven, but finding hell en route to the seven heavens. Quite a place.
Well, you know, I don't comment on that because I'm not an expert on that. My specialty really is what's happening now. And, of course, a lot of the wild 1001 Arabian Nights imagination, there's plenty of it today, too.
Yeah, I would tell you that that where we probably differ on Islam is not on the consequence of Islam. We see that play out, and I think you're one of the few people who is not politically correct that's willing to pin the tail on the donkey, or the wild winged ass in this case. But my expertise is on the scriptures of Islam. I am an expert in the Quran and the Hadith in Muhammad's life. I'm one of the few people that's actually taken the Quran and put it in chronological order. I use the chronology of the Hadith to do so, and then report on what the Quran says when it is viewed chronologically and in the context of Muhammad's life. And under that basis, this horrible religion can be easily understood.
If I may correct you, sir.
Yes.
I don't call it a religion.
Yeah,
I call it a criminal psychosis.
Yeah.
Bent on the destruction of the human race.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
not a religion. Yeah. And their God is not God. Their God is Satan, the Lucifer, the devil.
Yeah.
He wants to kill the Jews on Saturday, the Christians on Sunday, the Hindus, the Buddhists, and the blacks in Africa any day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the Muslims slaughter each other in the name of that so-called God. That could only be Lucifer, Satan, the devil, who wants to kill everyone created in the image of God to prove that he's greater than God.
Yeah, let me tell you the places where we agree here. Islam's first official act, the first official act of the Islamic era, was the Pledge of Aqaba. And the Pledge of Aqaba marks day one of the Islamic era. And Muhammad has been booted out of Mecca in shame. He has come up with the satanic verses, which made him a laughingstock. He came up with his wild ass rides to Jerusalem during the night, which made him a laughingstock. And as a result, he is now kicked out of Mecca. And the first thing that he does is have the Pledge of Aqaba with 12 pagan Arabs en route to Medina, which was at the time Yathrib. And the Pledge of Aqaba is a pledge to wage war against all mankind. That is the entirety of the Pledge of Aqaba. Now, the first official act of the Islamic era is the what's called the Battle of Badr, but it's not a battle at all. And with the Quran and Hadith, the 8th surah of the Quran is devoted entirely to the Battle of Badr. It says, as well as the hadith, that Muhammad went there for the express purpose of robbing a civilian caravan. So when you speak of Islam as a criminal enterprise, that's exactly what it is. It was born out of a lust by Muhammad to rob the wealth of others. And so it is, in fact, a criminal enterprise, first and foremost. So in those things, you are correct. Now, we would differ on religion, in that I am anti-religious, and you view religions favorably. But we certainly agree that Islam is a criminal enterprise, and the Islamic scriptures bear that out. Now, the second thing we agree on, Avi, is that Allah was modeled after Satan. Satan is a Hebrew word, means the adversary. And when you read the Quran and Hadith, there is no question whatsoever that Muhammad, by his own admission, was demon-possessed, and he modeled his God after Satan.
Okay, well, if you want me to answer that, I will say that, that Islam is based on revelations that Muhammad received from the genies. You know who the genies are.
I will give you three requests. Yeah, the genie. He calls
them
jinn.
They are called the jinns.
Correct.
Don't be deceived. Jinns means the genies. You do not see any genies in the Judeo-Christian Bible. Muhammad received his revelations as a result of his epileptic seizures. When a person has a seizure in epilepsy, the person loses motor control. The oxygen cannot reach the brain for 3-4 minutes. And at that time, a person who is near death starts hearing voices. The word in Greek for a voice is a demon, or in Greek, daemon, D-E-M-O-N. Mm-hmm. So, yes, he heard the demons. He heard voices. And it's just, I can't understand how the human race cannot get it, that the whole idea behind Islam is based on a sickness called epilepsy, and revelations revealed to Muhammad as a result of a seizure because of his epilepsy. How many Jewish prophets or Christian apostles have you heard of who received their revelations from a sickness? Well, so Islam is based on a sickness, and it is a criminal psychosis bent on stealing and raping and slavery and killing.
It is fairly easy to come to the conclusion based upon the hadith that explained the nature of Muhammad's revelations and how he received them and how his body was racked with tremors when he received them, to come to the conclusion that he had epilepsy. And I wouldn't deny the fact that that is highly likely. But rather than surmise that and base it on the disease, what I do instead is say Muhammad had tremendous character flaws. He was a rapist. He was a pedophile. He was a mass murderer. He was an avowed liar by his own admission. He was a kidnapper. He was involved in the slave trade. There is probably no one in human history who was as depraved as Muhammad. And I see all of his revelations as situational scriptures, all given for the express purpose to satiate his lust for sex, power, and money. He made them all up. Every one of them. And the only ones that have a touch of credibility, Avi, are the ones where rabbis in Yathrib, and the Quran makes this really clear, sold Muhammad Talmud readings. And then Muhammad, who did not have a very good memory, botched them, and then he twisted them to serve his own personal interests. And so the little bit of the Quran that has some credibility is just because he bastardized, plagiarized, and twisted Talmud readings. There's nothing really more to it than that. It's the dumbest book ever written.
Okay, I got a gem for you.
Okay.
When President Obama visited Cairo in 2009, in January 2009, right after his inauguration, he went to the American University in Cairo, and he got up and he made a speech. And he said to the students there in the American universities that the Quran is a book of peace and that Muslims should learn not to kill. Because the Holy Quran says in Surah 5, verse 33, verse 31, I think it is.
Yeah, that's 32. 33 is the most ruthless verse ever issued in the name of religion. And they always quote from 32, and they never say two things. One is 32 was written expressly for Jews, and it's plagiarized. And 33, of course, is the written for Muslims, and it's, you know, crucify them, cut off arms and legs, murder them, imprison them, do whatever, you know, torturous things you can do to them. Yes, that's what he quoted. It's 532.
Mm-hmm. That he was saying that the Holy Quran teaches us not to kill and
right,
do
yeah.
these things, but he was misquoting the Quran.
Correct.
The Quran says is in 31:32, Allah commanded, taught the Jews that anyone who saves a human being saves the world,
right.
And anyone who takes the life of a human being destroys the world.
Mm-hmm.
But then it goes on with verse 33, which you are very correct.
Yeah.
Where it says, anyone who makes war on Allah and his prophet Muhammad spread disorder in the land, we will kill, we will crucify, we will chop the arms and legs off on alternate sides, and we will banish from the earth.
Right.
So basically what Obama is saying, what he should have said was that Allah said to the Jews, and by extension to the Christians, to be peacemakers, but to the Muslims, he said to kill everybody.
That's correct.
Obama didn't say that.
Oh, of course.
And it's very important to stress that that the Talmud, it was more or less canonized and completed by the year 500 A.D.
Correct, the Babylonian Talmud.
No Bedouin desert illiterate nomad could have known those things.
No.
And the person who wrote the Quran, the two people who wrote the Quran, it was a Jewish rabbi and a Christian priest. This is in my fifth book, Islam Prophesied in Genesis, which is also, by the way, available on Amazon and on Kindle, and also through my website. The name of the rabbi was Obadiah ben Shalom, that's in Hebrew, or Abdullah ibn Salam in Arabic, and the name of the Christian priest was Sergius Bukhaira. This priest and this rabbi were kidnapped, put into a dungeon, and forced to write the so-called holy book known as the Quran. But the rabbi and the priest put in codes into the Quran proving that this was a false book. It wasn't even a plagiarism. The Quran is a practical joke written by a rabbi and a priest. And these Muslim, early Muslim Bedouin warriors were fantastic murderous warriors, but they were illiterate and they were not sophisticated enough to understand that the rabbi and the priest were laughing at them.
Well, clearly, we're going to disagree on the authorship of the Quran. But the fact of the matter is that what little in it is saying was stolen from rabbis, and the rest of it is gibberish. Back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with Avi Lipkin, also known as Victor Mordecai. If you want to check out Avi's books, and he has been writing on Islam for longer than most of us have, you just Google Avi Lipkin, and it'll take you directly to his site, and then from his site to his books. The first book that you wrote, Avi, according to your site, I'm assuming this would be accurate, was actually published in 1997, which was 4 to 5 years before the rest of us garnered an interest in Islam, and it was titled "Is Fanatic Islam a Global Threat?" What caused you to write the book, and do you still hold the this modifier of fanatic Islam, or have you come now to recognize that the problem is just Islam, not extremist Islam, but just regular old Islam, the Islam of the Quran, the Hadith, the Islam of Muhammad?
Well, firstly, I agree with what you just said, that it's not a question of fanatic. But, you know, I had to have the pretensions to political correctness when I first wrote my book 18 years ago.
Yep.
So I said fanatic Islam, and I was a chicken, and I wrote under the name of Victor Mordecai, which is my pen name.
Yeah.
My first three books were Victor Mordecai.
I don't blame you for doing that. I actually wrote Prophet of Doom, which I think is today still the most comprehensive presentation of the Islamic scriptures, the five books that comprise Islam. I wrote it under my actual name. Now, I do this show under the name Yada, which, as you know, in Hebrew means to know. Having written it under my own name, I received, last count, about 10,000 death threats. So, you know, it's Muslims don't play very nice.
Well, I'm very offended, you know, because I haven't gotten really any of the death threats yet.
Yeah. You know, I think the reason I got so many death threats was a combination of two things. First, right after 9/11, I flew to Jerusalem, and I met with a number of Knesset members, the purpose of my trip was I wanted to find out why fundamentalist Muslims, and at the time I didn't know they were fundamentalists, but I wanted to understand why Muslims flew planes into our buildings. I mean, they were shouting Allahu Akbar. I wanted to find out why they did that. I mean, they confessed to the crime. And so I negotiated over the course of 2 weeks with a number of Knesset members. And finally, via the Mossad, was signed a document that said, all right, you seem convinced that this is a right thing to do. Understand that if you do this, the chances are they will kidnap you. We will have no way to get you back. There will be no bargaining, no leverage. But if this is what you want to do, we'll set you up with a meeting. And I met with a number of leaders of Islamic terrorist groups inside of Israel and interviewed them for my first book, which is called Tea with Terrorists. And shortly thereafter, I began to do radio programs on it and then wrote Prophet of Doom. And Prophet of Doom is deadly to Islam because it takes the five oldest and the only five sources written about Muhammad and the creation of Islam within 250 years of his death. And it takes those five sources and weaves them together chronologically to present the Quran in context, and it is devastating. And so because of that book, I ended up doing 3,000 hours of talk radio interviews before doing my own show. And in that process, I garnered 10,000 death threats before I just finally stopped. I'm not going to read my email anymore if I just gave up reading it about 5 years ago. But you know, Muslims don't like it when you use their own scriptures to prove that their religion is a complete farce.
I think that the greatest threat to Islam is not you or me. The greatest threat to Islam is Islam.
Of course.
Islam, as a criminal psychosis, based on the destruction of the human race, is going to cause the world to shut it down.
Yes, it will. It can't conquer the world, but it can destroy it.
9/11 is nothing compared to what they're promising to do in the next round of 9/11 attacks.
Of course.
Which will cost, perhaps, God forbid, millions of lives. Yeah. And I think what's going to end Islam is going to be ISIS, and ISIS has promised it's going to take Mecca, it's going to blow up the Black Stone, the Kaaba. In other words, ISIS is going to destroy its holiest place in Islam. They're going to kill the king of Saudi Arabia and his family, and they're going to blow up the oil wealth. And you've heard of the one world government. The one world government is not going to tolerate that. And that's when Islam is going to get shut down.
Yeah.
By the way, regarding 9/11, I just wanted to tell you that, you know, until 2001, until 9/11, everyone was criticizing me heavily and saying I was crazy that when I said they're going to blow up the World Trade Center. This was in my first book.
Yeah.
And after it happened, everyone was saying, Abhi's a prophet. I said, I'm not a prophet. I just listened to my wife, Rachel. Rachel monitored the Arabic broadcast for years before 9/11.
Uh-huh.
And they were promising that that was what they were going to do.
Well,
now, ISIS is promising, and the FBI confirms this, that they're going to carry out horrible 9/11-type attacks, many attacks on the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that happens, when enough Westerners die, then the West is going to terminate Islam.
Yeah. Have you heard of a fellow named Ramzi Youssef?
Of course, he was the engineer who created the bomb in 1993.
Correct. Abhi, the best predictor of the future events is almost always past events. And you're correct. You did not have to be a prophet to predict the fall of the World Trade Centers. And the reason I mentioned Ramzi Youssef, a name that, of course, you know quite well, is that he was the first bomber of the World Trade Center. He's the one that organized the bomb that was planted into the parking structure beneath it. But do you know, Ramzi Youssef was not a member of Al-Qaeda. And Ramzi Youssef was in the Philippines. Do you know that Ramzi Youssef conceived and wrote down the entire plan for 9/11, right down to who was going to be recruited, how they were going to be managed, how they'd be trained to fly these airplanes, where they would take the airplanes, and what buildings they would fly them into? And not only did he write it down and put it on his computer, but the Philippine government got control of that computer, published what he wrote, and gave it to the FBI. We knew 5 years in advance what they were going to do.
Also, another thing, very important, I imagine, I'm sure you've heard of Operation Bojinka, and this was Ramzi Youssef's plan in Manila in the Philippines.
Yeah, he attested it.
12 American civilian airliners, coincidentally.
Right.
And by the way,
can I interrupt you? Just interrupt you one second.
Terry Nichols.
Yeah, let me.
They trained with Ramzi Youssef before the Oklahoma City bombing. In other words, this was a Saddam Hussein attack, and according to the Department of Justice, have you heard of Dr. Lori Milroy?
Yeah, let's back up just one second so our listeners are up to speed with this. The Bojinka attack was the idea of using liquid chemical explosives over the wing of an airplane to bring down the airplane by blowing up the fuel remaining in the wings. It was actually tested. The idea was conceived by Ramzi Youssef in the Philippines. He was a member of Abu Sayyaf, not Al-Qaeda, and he tested it on a flight to Japan, killed one individual. The reason that we can't have liquids on airplanes today is because of his plan. So that is absolutely true. And he is the mastermind of the first bombing of the World Trade Center and the second bombing of the World Trade Center. So all of that is factually accurate, and Americans and the governments knew it. I mean, you probably heard about it. I read about it. We knew it was going to happen before it happened. Correct?
But again, it has to be emphasized that he was captured in Pakistan after a botched preparation of a one of these liquid dynamite bombs in his Manila apartment, and he left his computer on. He escaped to the east. The whole building was going to blow up. He had 12 other ceramic bombs there ready to go.
Yeah.
But again, Terry Nichols, who is a lifer in an American jail regarding the Oklahoma City bombing, the Oklahoma City bombing was blamed on the so-called crazy Christian Waco militia people, but this was a Saddam Hussein bombing, and Dr. Lori Milroy explained this to me very clearly many times. Timothy McVeigh was executed too quickly. And we never saw what no one ever heard him say anything. He was killed, so he would not talk. And Terry Nichols is in jail, put away for life. They trained with Ramzi Youssef in the Philippines. This is in my first and my third book.
I think one of the two of them. Let me tell you where we...
Website, they can get the books.
Okay, let me tell you where we agree on this. One of the two trained in the Philippines. He had a relative in the Philippines, and he did train with Ramzi Youssef, and the documentation of that is extraordinarily compelling. And the manufacture of that bomb, the ammonium nitrate fuel oil bomb, was designed by Ramzi Youssef and taught to the Oklahoma City bombers. And it, while they may not have been aficionados of Islam, the inspiration for that bombing and the means to bring down the building was Ramzi Youssef's doing. So Ramzi Youssef, by the way, did not have ties to Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein hated fundamentalist Islam. He was a fundamentalist Muslim, and his ties to Al-Qaeda were only familial, not organizational. And that is that his a sister began to be one of the date and then become one of the wives of Sheikh Khalil Muhammad, who was a member of Al-Qaeda. And that's how Al-Qaeda came to know of his plan to bring down the World Trade Center.
Okay. All I'm saying is that my source in the Department of Justice, Dr. Lori Milroy, was actually, chastising me and castigating me when I spoke about Islam as being a threat. And she said, no, the Ramzi Youssef was a paid Baluchi agent. Baluchistan is in Iran and Pakistan. And the Baluchis are Sunnis. They hate the Iranians. So he was a Baluchi working for Saddam Hussein. And that
We're going to agree to disagree on all of that. Let's move on to your second book. Your second book was the Islamic threat updates, where you provided after 9/11 information on what you thought would be additional Islamic attacks. What was the motivation for that book, and what was the core message of that book?
Well, basically, after the 9/11 attacks, I had 12 months in which time to monitor everything that was going on around the world, and the Muslims were absolutely sure they were on the road to victory, to defeat America, to destroy America, and once you destroy America, the great Christian Satan, then the rest of the world falls like dominoes to Islam. What I'm saying today is you have two different ways to destroy America. One is through the 9/11 revolutionaries, but then you have the evolutionaries, who are the Saudis and the bankers and the oil companies, who are all in cahoots to bring in millions of Muslims into America and take over the country incrementally.
Okay, so you're tying the OPEC connection of in Saudi Arabia in particular and American financial interests together to say that we have become our own worst enemy, and that and this we will agree. Had it not been for OPEC and America's capitulation on the monopolistic practices and the stealing of American and British assets in Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and throughout the Islamic world, that Islamic terrorism outside of the Middle East would not exist today. It is being fueled entirely by the proceeds of OPEC.
Very correct. The ironic thing is that now the golem, we say in Hebrew, the golem is the monster, actually takes over and attacks the creator of the monster. Saudi Arabia was the creator of the monster. Now the monster is going to attack Saudi Arabia because the king of Saudi Arabia is considered an infidel, a heretic, and traitor by ISIS for all the philandering behavior of the princes, the drinking, the gambling, the prostitution,
right,
as well as 1 million Hindu slaves from India and right, 1 million Catholic slaves from Philippines working in Saudi Arabia. And finally, collaboration with the one world government economy. And ISIS is saying the way to destroy the West is to blow up the oil wells and terminate any oil exports to the West. That'll starve the world, and in two weeks, no oil, no plastic, meaning destruction of the world economy. That's why I'm saying I think that Islam very soon will be banned by the one world government.
Yeah, as I look at the Islamic State, and I don't refer to them as ISIS. They were only ISIS for about 1 month of their existence. They were the Islamic State in Iraq, and they became the Islamic State in Iraq because of the American invasion. The American invasion empowered Shia Muslims to terrorize Sunni Muslims with American weapons, and they did. And the Islamic State was created principally to protect Sunni Muslims from Shia Muslims in Iraq. And then it grew over time to the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, when they found that that they would be able to attract more jihadists and garner more weapons if they expanded their reach. But with the exception of about a month where they were ISIS, they are the Islamic State, and I rather like the name that they chose because Islam is the defining nature of who they are. Personally, you know, you're going to survey the Islamic State and who they are and what their goals are. I do not see the Islamic State in the short order attacking Saudi Arabia. And I think there's reasons for not seeing them do that. I don't think they're going to try to conquer Baghdad or Saudi Arabia. And let me speak to, because I think this is an area where I would really be interested in seeing how you think all this is going to play out. Because when America invaded Iraq, what we did is we started a civil war between Sunnis and Shia Muslims. And we gave Iraq to Iran. And the Sunnis, which outnumber the Shias 4-1 and outgun them about 25-1, were pummeled, and they responded. And Saudi Arabia in particular saw this as an opportunity to rein in the increased power that America had given to Iran, and began to arm, as did Qatar, the Islamic State. And then when the Islamic State says, hey, the guys supplying us with the arms, they're infidels because of their decadence, now they created a monster, and they don't know how to deal with that monster. But I don't think the monster at this point has the wherewithal to take down Saudi Arabia or to take down Iran. I think it'd be suicide.
Okay. I agree 100% on this with you. My most recent book, my seventh book, came out two months ago, and it's called Islamic Rivalry. And it's exactly about this, about the Shiites versus the Sunnis.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the problem here is that the United States, and this is chapter one of the book, mm-hmm. the United States has many fallacies. It doesn't really understand what's going on in the Middle East. And, you know, George W. Bush, for whom I have a lot of respect personally, but George W. Bush comes out and says, we're going to bring democracy to Iraq. Democracy means handing over to the majority the power. The majority
right.
of the Shiites.
Right, right.
So it's not like America. In America, no. you have Democrats in power, then they fall out of power, Republicans come to power. Then Republicans
right.
fall out of favor with the American people, Democrats come back, you know.
Yeah.
Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. You cannot have absolute power in the U.S. because the Democrats and the Republicans keep defeating each other every 4 to 8 years. It's a pendulum swinging back and forth. But you don't have that in the Middle East. If you hand over power from the Sunnis, from Saddam Hussein to the Shiites are going to slaughter the Sunnis
Correct.
Because the Sunnis slaughtered the Shiites.
Right.
In America, when Democrats and Republicans exchange power, nobody gets killed. It's like a baseball game. Everyone's eating popcorn on election day. But yeah. in the Middle East, America basically handed over power to the Shiites. You're 100% correct.
And arm them.
And what's happening now is you've got Saudi, you've got Turkey, you've got Egypt, and
right.
these are the countries
scared
that are
scared to death,
supporting ISIS.
Right. Scared to death based upon what America did to empower Shia Islam. Welcome back to Shattering This Remnant Conversation with Avi Mordecai. His last book is about this fracture in Islam between Sunni and Shia Islam. Avi, I know that George Bush stated that he was trying to bring democracy to Iraq by way of his invasion. I know George Bush personally. I've spent a lot of time with him personally. I am not a fan of George Bush, but I can tell you that was not why he invaded Iraq. He wanted to be a wartime president. He saw what it did to his father's popularity. He invaded for personal reasons, having nothing to do with Iraq and democracy. And I think you're right when you say that America's foreign policy, or military policy, shows a complete ignorance of who we're dealing with. Well, you know, when Bremer said, you know, we're going to have a constitution that has a united Iraq, and the Kurds and the Sunnis and the Shias are all going to share power, and we're going to have one person, one vote, and that's what we're going to end up with as a constitution like America. I mean, it was brain dead. You could play that circumstance out a million times and never end up with that conclusion. It was impossible.
Well, indeed, one of the things I'm saying is that for those people who don't know or maybe know the history of Iran, mm-hmm. they had a prime minister, a nationalist prime minister by the name of Mossadegh, and he was deposed by the CIA, and instead, you know, they strengthened, they brought in the Shah at full power.
Correct.
The Shah, the truth is, the Shah was the most faithful ally of America in the Muslim world, the Shiite Muslim world, but also the Muslim world. But then Jimmy Carter deposed and brought him down with his big new Brzezinski.
Right.
And so then after that, Saddam Hussein, who was the ally of the U.S. for mm-hmm. 9 years of war with Iran, you know, Saddam was the savior.
Right.
And then Saddam was brought down by George W. Bush.
We put them in power, and then we tore them down. We manufactured our next enemy. In each of these cases, yeah, our CIA's meddling in foreign countries is as despicable as our CIA engaging in torture. We think that the world is our sandbox and that no crime is inappropriate. No manner of killing or of rigging governments is inappropriate. So long as it serves America's interest. But every time that you use immoral means to achieve your goal, to bite you. And so we simply manufactured our next enemy. So you are correct. I would say that quite easily that what we are witnessing between the Sunnis and Shias today and the empowerment of Shia Islam did in fact begin with Jimmy Carter and Zbigniew Brzezinski. But It was exacerbated enormously by George W. Bush when he invaded Iraq, deposed Saddam Hussein, and gave Iraq to the Iranians.
I'll add, with your permission, one more example. Hosni Mubarak of Egypt, it's true he fell in February 11 as part of the Arab Spring, so-called Arab Spring.
Yeah, it's but actually an Islamic reformation.
Yes, the plans were in the offing during George W. Bush to overthrow Mubarak, because Bush's legacy was to then invade Iran, and Mubarak said he didn't want to have anything to do with it because Mubarak said that everything America does gets destroyed.
Correct.
And so he said he didn't want Egypt getting involved in this adventure with Iran. So George W. worked to depose him. The timing of him being deposed was under Obama through the Arab Spring, and of course social media. It's what overturned all these Arab countries. And now America's going to enjoy an invasion of millions of Muslims to the United States. The whole thing is coming apart in the Middle East. Only Syria doesn't exist anymore. Iraq does not exist anymore.
Correct.
And I think we're going to be seeing other countries coming apart.
You have a city-state of Damascus, which is all there is to the original Syrian government. There's a city-state of Damascus. The rest of Iraq is controlled by the Islamic, or Syria is controlled by the Islamic State, as are virtually all of the Sunni populated areas of Iraq. They are controlled by the Islamic State. And then you have Iran controlling the Shia areas of Iraq. And so the Shia areas of Iraq, including Baghdad, are nothing but Iran West. And Lebanon is a satellite now of Shia Islam, as is the city-state of Damascus, and all the rest is this jihadi state of the Islamic State.
If I may, one little correction, though. Mm-hmm. It's not just the city-state of Damascus, but it's also the corridor going to Latakia. Latakia, the northwest part of Syria, is also controlled by Bashar al-Assad and his family. And the rumors are, pretty soon, and we don't know when exactly, that Bashar al-Assad will evacuate all his troops from Damascus. It will fall to the Islamic State. And they're all going to withdraw to the coastal area of northwest Syria.
We'll pick this up in a moment.